The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Miller. The first round tries to test their vocabulary, and for 2 marks, I want to know the meaning of these words. We begin with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what's the meaning of sewable?
S-U-A-B-L-E, sewable.
Sewable?
Yes.
Liable to be sued.
Exactly that. 2 marks. Sewable means something that can be sued, liable to be sued, legally subject to civil process of law. Well done. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, what is troat? T-R-O-A-T, or even if you prefer it, two troat.
Well, one would be enough. I don't know. Troat. I think it's a trout whose mother had an affair with a stoat.
You're in the
between a trout and a stoat. That takes a lot of perseverance.
You're in the animal kingdom, which
I think
is right.
It's genetically impossible.
It's an animal or fish.
I think one out of two for gallantry. Troat is the cry of the rutting buck. And
the answer is, oh dear.
It also, I'm told, I didn't know this until this evening, it can be an interjection you use for urging on hounds, asses and sheep. But that's quite a bit different. Anne Scott James, what does Cenozoic or Cainozoic mean? C-E-N-O-Z-O-I-C or C-A-I-N, the same. Cenozoic.
It sounds like one of those words like Pleistocene.
Yes.
Which is something to do with traitor or...
Making multi-geology.
Geology, that's the thing.
Have a shot at when this happened, roughly. I mean, give or take 200 million years.
absolutely recently, I should think.
That's
just
right.
About 1 million years ago.
It includes that. I think that'll do. Cainozoic is the third or latest of the great geological period. It's the one also called tertiary. It simply means third. And it comes from two words, Greek kainos, and meaning new, and zoon, meaning animal. It's the bit that includes us, which is why 1 million years is quite a good shot.
Especially if you're on HP, yeah.
Thank you. What does the verb to interosculate mean? Inter, and then O-S-C-U-L-A-T-E. Interosculate.
Well, that's tautology, isn't it? You can't osculate by yourself. Osculate is to kiss. Inter is between, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
Interosculate means to kiss between. But between what and what? This is an oral examination.
It's an orky.
One and a half. It means to intermingle with each other or form a connecting link between two
doubtless
between two groups of objects. It can be used for all sorts of other kinds of things like plants and vegetables, quite apart from what you do with lips. Now, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and then I hope that the two women members of the team will go on studying the quotations, because at the end of the program I shall ask them where they come from. Not they, but the quotations. Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is, to err is human, to forgive divine. And Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is, farewell, a long farewell to all my greatness. And then at the end of the program I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these came to be said or written. The second round asks the team to identify the author of the week and to answer questions about his works. 2 marks for correct answers. So I begin with a quotation. The cataract of the cliff of heaven fell blinding off the
bridge. Be great,
Chesterton. Not your question. I think I must be allowed to finish the quotation, though you're dead right. As if it would wash the stars away as floods go down a sink, The seven heavens came roaring down for the throats of hell to drink, and Noah, he cocked his eye and said, "It looks like rain, I think. The water has drowned the Matterhorn as deep as a mendip mine, but I don't care where the water goes if it doesn't get into the wine." I know too much, that's the trouble. Anyway, the first question has been answered as to who the author was, but that's not the end of it. In which of his novels does this song occur? G.K. Chesterton's novels.
A Frank.
Flying In.
Yes, quite right.
Oh, the collection of drinking ballads.
Absolutely right. G.K. Chesterton's Flying In, it was sung by Captain Patrick Delroy, who was ex-King of Ithaca. Now, Dennis Norden, what was the name of the inn and what happened to it?
Oh, dear. Can't remember anything about it except a big cheese.
That's right, quite right. Captain Patrick Delroy was an ex-officer of Her Majesty's Navy, which might help you to the name of the inn.
The name of the inn? I can't remember.
I'm getting mixed up with the jumblers.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one out of two. The name of the inn was the Old Ship, and it was closed by the machinations of Lord Ivywood. So Patrick Delroy and Humphrey Pump, who was the landlord, escaped with this large round cheese, as Dennis quite rightly says, but also with the inn sign and a barrel of rum, and they then defied the law by setting up the sign and providing drinks all round the country. And Scott James, which day of the week was given as a pseudonym for the man in the title of another of G.K. Chesterton's novels?
Oh, the man who was Friday. Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. Thursday, I mean, Thursday. The man who was Thursday.
It was on the repeat.
I was thinking of Robinson Crusoe.
You went on the post. Thursday. The main character in The Man Who Was Thursday, who was called Gabriel Stein, found himself included in a conspiracy in which he becomes the man who was Thursday under the fairly sinister looking but in the end benevolent rule of the man who was Sunday. Now, Frank Muir, what was Father Brown not really so very innocent about?
Is this a value judgment you're going for? The innocence of Father Brown was the first of the Father Brown novel.
That's right.
Father Brown was a Roman Catholic priest who was also a detective.
Yeah.
Innocent, one would have thought, of crime,
yeah,
but cognizant of the workings of the mentality of men's minds.
Absolutely right. 2 marks it is. Now we've got a round of specialised nouns which denote certain types of movement. And again, 2 marks. Phyllis Powell, what is an entrechat and where does it usually happen? Entrechat.
It happens in the ballet.
And what is it?
Well, it's a kind of... I don't think I could illustrate it. This is my age.
Oh, go on.
You sort of leap on
I'll one... hold your boot.
On, you leap on one foot and you...
Is it when you scissor?
No, yes, that's right, that's it.
You go, you leap up and you go... Yes. You make like an egg beater.
I think that's a very accurate description of it. It's a movement in ballet dancing, and it means you strike your heels together for as many times as you possibly can in the course of leaping up into the air, and comes from an Italian word, capriola. Intrecciato, which is simply a complicated caper, and it certainly is. Too much. Dennis Norden, what is a telemark, and in which country was it first developed?
A telemark is the imprint left on the carpet when you move the furniture. I know it's something to do with skiing.
Yes, fair enough.
What to do with skiing?
Right.
We didn't ask you that.
No, I never done.
Have a shot at the country it comes from.
Norway.
Yes, I'll do.
Norway.
Telemark was a steered or swung turn in skiing, and you used it either to change direction if you could, or to stop short equally if you could, and particularly in powder snow. And it's a district in Norway, Telemark, where it was invented. And Scott James. What is a caracole, and who does it? Caracole, a caracole, and who does it?
I should think it's a dance.
In a way, it is. How many legs?
How many legs?
Yes, it helps.
It's that equestrian.
That's right, that's what I wanted.
Oh, sort of thing they do in the Spanish riding school.
Yes.
It's a prancing job.
Yes, which way?
It's striptease or undressage.
Do you think it's a horse prancing on its hind legs?
You're not awfully far wrong. Executing a half turn to the right or to the left. It's done by the horse and with luck by the rider at the same time. One hop. Krenkner, what is an abseil? A-B-S-E-I-L. And in what kind of terrain might you be likely to see it happening?
Could be the terrain now standing at the platform.
Abseil.
Abseil?
Is it,
German.
Now, wait a minute. If I hadn't heard the word...
German.
German.
Up.
Up. Away. Up. Something away.
Climbing.
Yes.
The Jackson climber. It's one when you put your foot on a piton, or whatever it is, and...
It's got a rope.
Which way are you going, up or down?
Downwards.
Oh, that's right.
Downwards, the lady in front is gesticulating. Most helpful, thank you very much.
One and a half, with aid. Abseil is the act of descending a mountain or a rock face on a doubled rope, which is secured, you hope, above you, because it's too difficult or you haven't got time to climb down it unaided. It's simply two words, German words, to rope down or rope off. We turn now to very familiar lines of poetry, but I shall try and make questions just a bit more difficult by asking team members to give me the line before the lines I'm going to quote. And I also want the name of the author and the name of the poem, so three marks this time in all. Dillis Power, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
It's Byron.
Yes.
And it begins.
Yeah.
So we'll go no more a-roving, doesn't it?
Yes, that's perfect.
It does, it does.
Yes.
Time has passed for loving.
Jolly good shot. One and a half. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon. And tis Byron, and the poem is simply called So We'll Go No More A-Roving. Very poignant little poem. One and a half. Dennis Norden. And all the world would stare if wife should dine at Edmonton and I should dine at where?
Oh, that's John Gilfie.
Yes.
And it's, I can't remember the line, but it's something to do with his wedding.
Yes, that's right. Yes, fix up a line about wedding and you'll be more or less right.
Tomorrow is my wedding.
Yes, that's fine. That'll near enough. And who wrote it?
Cowper, William.
Yes, too much. And Scott James, that every man in arms would wish to be.
Is it the Agincourt speech?
No, much
every
later.
Every man in arms should wish to be.
Think of the middle of Trafalgar Square.
Well, I think of Nelson.
Yes. This is The Character of the Happy Warrior by William Wordsworth, based on the career of Nelson, but he rather abandoned this likeness after he found out about Lady Hamilton. And it starts, who is the happy warrior? Who is he that every man in arms would wish to be? And then it goes on at great length about how good Nelson was. Frank Muir, I know the scientific names of beings animalculous.
The song.
Yes. That's right.
I am the very model of a modern major general.
That's the song.
By William Schwenk Gilbert.
Yes, in?
In collaboration with Sir Arthur Sullivan.
Yep, which particular opera?
It's The Pirates of Penzance.
Which are good so far. Can you do me the line before the one I quoted?
Something about I know about integral and differential calculus.
Well done. Well done. Well, now we come to the last round, and we go back to those quotations I gave the teams earlier in the program. For two marks, to this power, can you give me the origin of your quotation, to err is human, to forgive divine?
It must be Pope.
It is Pope. Essay on Criticism. Two marks. And Anne Scott James, the origin of yours, please, which was farewell, a long farewell, to all my greatness.
It's Shakespeare, Jack.
But which play?
Henry VIII.
Yes, that's right. Two marks it is. And now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And for this round, the marks will go to whichever improbable explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Frank Miller and his quotation, to err is human.
Thank you.
To forgive
the I was standing in the street, queuing up for a bus, and there were two ladies, Lady A and Lady B. And Lady B said, to err is human. And my spirit was uplifted. It suddenly reinforced my faith in human nature, in the benevolence and the essential niceness of human beings, after what Lady A had said. It was really to do with this business of how one pictures oneself, the image one has of oneself, as against the actual thing. You never really know what people think of you. You only know what you think of yourself. I can see myself quite clearly without any kind of false vision. I have a flexible chin. This is almost indistinguishable from a weak chin, but it does have it's a sort of liberal chin, you know, and I have laughing dimples in my cheeks and chin, rather charming dimples. They're inverted dimples, actually. Whereas most dimples go in, mine come out. Can often be confused with warts and spots, but and I have a retroussé nose, and above that I have little lines, little laugh lines, which have matured into deep guffaws. And around the eyes, I have what one can't call crow's feet, because that's a sort of derogatory kind of term, you know, crow's feet. It's these sort of very charming vulture's claws. but a really splendid picture. This is the picture I've always had of myself. And the picture this woman, A and B, were looking at in the paper. And it really goes back to when I was young. Because when I was young, I had a vision of myself, and I knew what I wanted to be, and that was a male model. I had three ambitions, actually. One was to touch my nose with the end of my tongue, which I couldn't do because it's retroussé, as I've explained, with a barber's action. And the second was to cycle along Broadstairs Pier for 8 circumferences of the pedals without opening my eyes, which I achieved one winter afternoon, or would have done, except that at the 7th circumference I ran out of pier. My third was to be a male model. The attraction of being a male model was because you didn't have to do anything. You just had to stand slightly out of focus in the background, and not move, which suited me, because I get tired very easily. Now, the first time I had an opportunity of doing this was when a whiskey company asked me to lend my face to a newspaper advertisement. Now, this, I thought, I can do. The photograph was taken, and I saw two women with a newspaper, with my photograph, advertising this whiskey there, and I thought, now they're going to comment on the inverted dimples and the chin, those intriguing little guffaws around the eyes. But you know what Lady A said? Lady A said, look at him, look at him. He looks like a constipated orangutan. My world shattered. My world crumbled about my ears like cheap hair cream. I constipated. But Lady B restored my faith. Lady B said, dear, to you he may be a constipated orangutan, but somewhere, somebody loves him. Probably his wife, poor soul. And to her, he's human.
Thing. That was a splendid commercial for Frank's particular rugged style of beauty. And we go on to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation was, farewell, a long farewell to all my greatness.
Have you ever fallen through a harp? Oh, it's a messy experience. Happened to be the other night. I was being led backstage at the Royal Festival Hall after a concert, and they suddenly switched the lights out. And my friend shouted out, "Wait there." But I'd spotted this faint white aperture ahead. So I said, "It's all right. I can see a doorway." So I gaily leapt through it. Twang, twang, twang. It was awful. And as I gazed at this mess of splintered wood and sprawling strings, I thought to myself, it's happened again. Why are my personal disasters always such grotty ones? Last summer, I poured a whole cupful of hot coffee onto my lap in a nudist camp. What? Take the first time, well, in fact, the only time that I ever wore tails. The firm that I hired them from enclosed a keychain with them, one of the trouser-type keychains. You do up a little leather fob at one end onto your braces button and let the other end sort of dangle elegantly into your trouser pocket. Well, I got home at 4 o'clock in the morning, pulled the other end of the chain out of my pocket, and inserted my key in the front door. Now, I really didn't have any reason to believe that anybody else would be up at that hour. But she was. And hearing my key going into the lock, she snatched the door wide open. As often as not, it's this failing I have of just going off into a dream. You know, even at the most inopportune moments, the worst one did last night, this cocktail party, a private house, room jammed with people. There I'm standing, holding a warm gin and tonic, miles away, absolutely miles away. Sip the gin and tonic, think, hello, there's something lacking. And mindlessly, I reach out for a lemon, squeeze it into my glass, then suddenly wake up with absolute horror. The lemon had feathers on it. I can't tell you the indignity of having to go up to one's hostess and say, "Excuse me, I've just squeezed your canary." Particularly as it was during one of those inexplicable moments that comes over parties when for no reason everybody stops talking at the same moment. People say that that is a sign that the angel of death is passing over at that moment. All I can say is I sincerely hoped it was. In fact, I called out, "Down here, mate." That's exactly what I need at this moment. A farewell, a long farewell to all my grottiness.
Ladies and gentlemen, by your vote, Dennis Norden wins the contest of the stories, and the entire contest ends in a draw.
In My Word, you heard Dennis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland, who also compiled the questions. The program was devised by Tony Schwan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each